Start. And so for the first three lectures, we did sort of a lightning review of some of the features of Fortran. We all sincerely hope that you feel capable of writing a simple program. If not, you have to scream out. What I'm going to talk about now is unrelated to Fortran, and although I'll be interspersing a few comments about how you can look at this in Fortran. So whenever you do a calculation, then you probably verify a test case, and then you see that you reproduce your test case exactly and you're happy, and then you do your real world calculation, and then you start worrying about precision. Whenever you're doing calculations, it's something that you have to worry about. Have my calculation actually accumulated some errors that makes that the or means that the results are going to be meaningless. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about how things is actually represented on the computer. Not that you need to know this in any detail. If you believe me, this can actually become very interesting because it's related to error codings and so error correcting codes and these sort of things, which is a whole topic. But we just want to stay at a very more hands-on level here. So I just want to, first of all, talk about binary representations. And this is hopefully something that you have maybe heard about or looked at before. This, of course, goes for any programming language. I think any CPU architecture, at least any CPU architecture that you're likely to encounter. Unfortunately, we work in the decimal system, and probably the easiest reason to figure out why we decided on the decimal system is to look at your hands, right? The number of fingers on your hand is not a power of 2, it's 10. And if you had had 8 fingers on each hand, we would really have been in business. Because in that case, whatever I'm going to be telling you now is would have been a lot easier. So let's look at a simple integer. So for the moment, I'll be focusing on integers. And if in our decimal system I want to write the integer 6, I can do that simply in the binary system by writing something like this. And you can see here that I'm writing one byte here, or in other words, 8 bits. So this here is just one byte. We already talked about the fact that the computer actually works with 4 bytes. So I should really be writing 32 bits. I tried that once for a lecture, and it didn't go very well. So I'll just be writing, on most occasions, the first 8 bits here. And then you have to remember that there are probably other bits in your 32-bit words. So if you declare an integer, as you've already done in the for your programs, you will be getting an integer here that consists of 4 bytes, which is equal to 32 bits. So the way we usually interpret this one is that my convention, and that may not be your convention, and it incidentally may not be the way the computer thinks about it is, I start over here, so this is what's called the least significant bit. And that codes for the power 2 to the 0 or 1. This here would be 2 to the 1 or 2, and this here would be 2 to the 2 or 4, this 2 to the 3 or 8, right? And so forth. So actually, if we want to convert this binary number, I actually see that I have 1 times 2 to the 1, and then plus 1 times 2 to the 2. And that indeed is 6, right? So it's very easy once I have the binary code here to go from the binary code here and then convert into the decimal code. The other thing you note here is that the largest number I can write this way would be 1111, 1111. And if you're quick at calculating, you would know that this year is 255. Okay. So so far so good, and we haven't gotten into trouble yet. But the trouble now starts because we have to look at negative numbers. So does anybody know how you would, or let me be more specific? Let me talk here about negative integers. Does anybody know how you represent a negative integer? What? Yeah, so that's one way of doing it. So you can do what's called signed magnitude. And that's sort of a very straightforward way of doing it. If we want to write minus 6 here, and again, I'm going to truncate everything, so I'm looking at just 8 bits, then I take, as you call it, the MSB, which would be the most significant bit, which in my case is over here. And then we just use it to determine the sign, right? So this here is something that we call the sign bit. Is that actually how it's done on your laptop? What? Yes, it's actually done with something that's called 2's complement. So the question is, why is it that we, do you know why we use 2's complement here? Yeah, so the, you know, the answer to this is, of course, that one shouldn't have invented negative numbers, and we would all have been better off, but somehow they are actually useful. So if we just go with this one, then there's a problem here. And what could be the problem? Well, if I write 0000 and then 0000, then that would code for plus 0. But then I have another one here, and that would be minus 0. Okay. So then you say, okay, I'm going to have to, whenever I'm doing something, I'm going to have some if statements into my microcode that does the manipulation of these integers to figure out or sort of eradicate this problem that there are 2 representations for 0. But So this is one problem. The other problem is if I look at it, and then I take 1, 0, 0, 0, and then 0, 0, 0, 1. That would be our way of coding for minus 1. And then I add 0, 0, 0, 0 to it, and then 0, 0, 0, 1. So I add plus 1 to it, and now what is 1 minus 1? Does anybody know the answer? It's not a trick question. Yeah, we would hope to get 0. But if I just go ahead and do binary addition, then I have 1 plus 1. That gives me 0, and then I do a carry here of 1. Then I get a 1 there, and then 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1. So in this case, I get minus 2. That means that if I choose this representation for a negative number, I'm going to have to change my rules for additions. In other words, I'm going to have to be manipulating these differently than just standard ways of adding binary numbers. So we want to go to something that's slightly more convenient, and so we want another representation of a negative integer. And so another suggestion is to do what's called ones complement. So if I start with our case for plus 6 here, then I want to get to minus 6. And the way I do that is whenever it says 0 here, I write a 1. And whenever there is a 1 there, I write a 0. So that would be 0, 0, 1, and then 1, 1, 1, 1. Okay. So this here would be minus 6. Then the good thing about that is that if I now add this, I would get 1 here, and I would get 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. And then you might be asking, well, what is that? But this is 0, because if I look at the two different representations of 0, then there's 1 here, and if I replace all the zeros by this one, then I would get what you could call minus 0 here. So if I go to something like this one, then we can see that some of the problems that we had over here just with assigned magnitude, they're gone, and we seem to be getting ahead a little bit. So let me just make a little table here. Actually, maybe I'll do it over here. If we look at a binary pattern, so I would have 0, 0, 0, and then 0, 0, 0, 0. Then in one's complement here, this would be 0. And then if I just interpret it as an unsigned integer, in other words, I'm just looking at these 8 bits and doing the initial conversion that we looked at, Then, of course, I'm also going to get 0. Then the next one up, I would have a 1 here, and then everything would be 0. And I'm going to get 1 there and a 1 there, and everything is as it should be. Then I go down here, and I would be hitting something that would be 0, 1, 1, 1, and then 1, 1, 1, 0. And if you work that one out, it's 126 and 126. In other words, things will just change once we get to the point where I'm going to have to modify this one, and that will almost be the next one. So this here is 127, and here I have 127 as well. The next one up here is 1, and then 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. And that number, if I just look at it without representing negative numbers, is 128. It's a power of 2. But in this 1's complement, then I actually wrote minus 127. And then instead of goals, this here would then be minus 126. And then I go all the way down here to 1111, and then 1111, which is 0 again. So the and this here would, of course, just be counting up 129, and the last one would be 255. So the numbers that you represent are somewhat odd here. There's a jump here from 127 to minus 127, but things gets a little bit weirder if we look at an example like this. When we're adding, then here I cheated a little bit because I added plus 6 to minus 6. So let's write minus 1. That would be 111, 1110. That would be minus 1. And then I add 2 to it. That's just 000010. So that's 2. If I add 2 to minus 1, what should I get? What?
How do you know we're talking about the number minus 126, and when do you know it's number 129?
This one here?
How does the computer know the difference between the negative and the positive number?
That's a very good question. In Fortran, well, first of all, this here, as I'm going to tell you in 2 seconds, doesn't work on your computers. It's an old way of doing this that was used in probably up till around 1970. You would be, on the Fortran, getting what somebody already mentioned. You would be getting a better way of doing this, which I'll tell you about in 2 seconds, which is 2's complement. But when you're running a Fortran program, it will always be interpreting it as a signed integer. So you cannot go from this one to the other one. In some other programming languages, you can define integers that cannot be negative. But the bit pattern here, you can see, is the same. So the only difference is that the computer will have to interpret what does that bit pattern mean. Okay? And in Fortran, it will interpret it according as an integer that includes negative numbers. Does that make it? It's all a question of interpretation. And a lot of these are design issues. People get better ideas. And things evolve. If I add minus 1 to 2, I should be getting 1. So let's do this. Here I get 0, then I get 0 here. And things are not going so well. Then I have a carry here. So I get 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. And then I have a sort of carry that went over there, but it fell off a cliff because I only have 8 bits, right? And somehow here it looks like I'm going to try to set the number 9 bit. So you can see that we're in trouble because it doesn't look like ordinary addition will work. And so when they, so once complement here was in use on computer systems, what they figured out is that you can just be clever. Whenever this occurs, you just put that carry bit back in the first position, and then it works. So you can, this is called adding the carry back, and it's one of the ways that people have been hacking this around. So you can see that, well, maybe we should do something better. And doing something better, that is perhaps not. So you said you know what 2's complement is. So what is 2's complement? Yes. So 2's complement, of course, bears the name 2's because we had 1's complement, and 2 is 1 better than 1. So let's look at that. And that is actually this is how things are done today. And that's how things are done on your computers. And so let's have a look at how things can be done here. So we start with our 6 here, which would be like that. Okay. So then I go to the 1's complement, which would be this one. So that would be the 1's complement. And then I add 1. So I add 1 to it, and 1 is just written like that. And then I get 0 here. 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. So that gives us minus 6 in 2's complement. And at this point, you might be asking yourself, well, is this actually an improvement or not? And so let's have a look at that. So we had these two problems that we had several representations for 0, and we had a strange way of doing additions. So let's look at how we represent 0 here. Well, if I look here at the usual way of writing 0, then so this would be plus 0. Then I go to the 1's complement here, and that would be 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Okay, so then I add 1 to it. That would be 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. And now you see something magical, because this here gives me 0, and then I have a carry, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. And then there is a 1 that should be going in there, but that we're just going to discard. And that's actually a behavior that you have to be aware of quite often. For instance, something that we'll talk about later on, random number generators, they rely on the fact that you throw away these bits that you would need extra places in your words to put in. So software can be, depending on whether or whatever happens to these higher bits there. But this here would be plus 0, and this here would be our representation of minus 0, and you can see they're the same. So we have just a single representation of 0 here. I always wondered how they came up with this, but Yes. I know the So this year's not. I should say that the here I'm adding. Yes. So which is in 2's complement. Thanks for pointing that out. Is that clear? Yeah. It's probably true. The of course, you realize here that doing these manipulations are paramount to getting your computer to work. So people, if you go over in the electrical engineering department, they probably have a whole building of people trying to figure out how you do this efficiently. And there are tons of tricks. And well, we're not gonna worry about them. The only thing, but let me just look at the addition here. And what we're hoping for is that addition will now work. So I look at 111 here. No, sorry. We'll look at 011. And then 1111. Now that would just be 127. What do I want to add to it? I want to add minus 126. Minus 126 here, that's 1. And then 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0. And now when I add, I get a 1 here, then I get a 0 and a carry, then 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 a 0 and a carry, and then a 0 and a carry, and a 0, and then there's 1 here that drops off the cliff. And indeed, this here is, in fact, 1. So addition does work, and we're in business. I just wanted to make this same table and then just look at what the values would be if we do it in 2's complement. Everything here, as long as this bit is not set, it's going to be the same. So I'm just going to have 0 and 1, and this here would be 126, then this would be 127. But things are now slightly different, because this here is a minus 128, this here is minus 127, and then we go down, and the last number I'm writing here is minus 1. The reason why I'm telling you this is twofold. Whether or not a number is negative or not, you can determine by the first bit. So, and that's sort of a good rule, because the signed magnitude seemed like a good idea, that we have one bit, and immediately that bit tells us whether something is negative or not. The other thing that is worthwhile noting, even though you might not see why this is important, is that there's one more negative number. That's, of course, because the total number of integers that I can represent is even. If I take one to represent, or one of these bit patterns to represent zero, then I'm left with an odd number. So I have to get either one more positive number or one more negative number. And in some cases, this is viewed as, well, a slight flaw in the system. Yes?
So, is it faster
than just like a filtering function that determines the signed integer rather than taking the greater? I would very much doubt that you can beat the internal functions, because they would, well, it depends a little bit. Yeah, usually anything like this, you would, if you can, the rule is, if you can, you should be using these internal functions, because they know this already, right? And so they would have made use of it. But by all means, you can check, do a do loop where you check for the sign of an integer, or see whether it's bigger or less than zero, and do that 100 million times, and then see which one is the fastest. Okay, so I want to, at this point, you're probably going to say that, well, does this have anything to do with reality? And you're going to be playing around a little bit with it this afternoon, so I just wanted to give you a few hints of for the tutorial this afternoon, and how you can look at this in Fortran. So in Fortran, there are some what you might call bit functions, and so I would have an integer here. And that integer would be, let's call it j. And then I have another integer, which is the position. And then I can manipulate, I can set j here equal to 1, right? If I do that, then the bit pattern should be looking something like this. But then I can be actually manipulating the bits individually. So let's say that we set the position here equal to 1. And then I say that j is equal to I bit set, and then j comma position. What this here will do, it will set the first bit of J. And we have to remember, in this case, that they're actually starting from 0. So the least significant bit would be bit number 0. So when I set that second bit here, what value will J have? What? Well, in other words, when I set this here equal to 1, I'm looking at a bit pattern like this. And then I go in and I set this bit here. And then I would claim that J now has the value 3. So it's a very cumbersome way of setting J equal to 3. I can go in and I can also set J equal to I bit clear here of J and position. So I set the first bit equal to 0. And again, starting where the numbering is that the least significant bit is bit number 0. So after that, so here I would be setting bit number 1. Here I'm setting it equal to 0. So I can actually go in and just take this bit and set it. Yes? Yes, it's a built-in function. That was your question? It returns an integer, and I'm assigning that integer to J. The last thing that you need to know is there's also a way of testing for whether or not that bit is set. So here I'm asking if bit position is set, right? Maybe at this point you're wondering, well, why would these be useful? And the answer to that is that quite often you're actually extensively making use of the fact that I can code information in 32-bit words. And so these could not only be interpreted as an integer, but they could actually be a position of some variable in the statistical mechanical model. You had a question. It says, yeah, IB, maybe let me write it. It's IBCLR. Yeah, this here will set it to 1, and this will set it to 0.
So why the first argument?
Because I have to be manipulating K equals
J is the variable being manipulated.
Yes, J is the variable that's being manipulated.
So it returns an
integer where that bit is set.
Just
that bit, it doesn't look, it doesn't manipulate any of the other bits.
So then, J will, okay, so let's say I give it, like J is set to 1 right now, but let's say I set it to 48. Will it just set the first bit to 1 and the rest of the leaf the same? Or it's
yes.
Like 0, 0, 0?
No. It will just, so this here is bit number 0, this is bit number 1, 2, 3, 4. It just goes in, it sets that one equal to 1.
But what it returns
whatever the other bits were is unchanged.
So it flips the bit of the argument.
No, it doesn't flip it. If it already was 1, then it remains 1.
What it returns, if I said k is equal to that,
yes.
That would just give me 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1.
No.
Yes.
You're operating on a. You take a bit pattern, and then you just touch that first bit or the bit at position here.
So it's just a bit, not redundant, but.
This here is an example. this is a working code. I can so maybe. you took Leo Kadanath's course, right? And you heard about the easing model, right? Easing model. Somebody, and I'm like, I can tell a story. I'll do that some other time. Anyway, and we might do this for a homework. When you want to simulate the easing model, you want to represent the spins as simple integers that could be 1 and minus 1. Okay, but the information you're trying to store is really then just making use of a single bit. So in other words, your memory requirement is 32 times higher than it need to be. And in some cases, in sometime during the 1980s, people got interested in what's called spin glasses, which was an idea of, among others, Phil Anderson. And in that case, you have an easing model where the couplings are random. And what they figured out is that, oh, well, why don't I, instead of simulating one easing model, I simulate 32 of them simultaneously. And the 32 corresponding to different realizations. And all you have to do is just to go in and look at the 32 bits in your integer and not look at them as some signed or unsigned integer, but just as representing an easing variable. And that was actually extensively done in these simulations. In that case, you're just going to go in and look at the bit number 3 here, and then you want to set it equal to 0 or to 1 and so forth, and you don't at all care about the remaining ones. In that case, you would precisely be doing manipulations like this one. So that's the idea. I can go in and I can play with a single bit in the word. I can go in and set it, I can go in and clear it, and I can go in and test whether it's set or not. And the paradigm is that I have a bit pattern here represented by J. Then I play with the bit at position pos here, and the whole bit pattern is then returned here and assigned to whatever integer you want to put there. Here I'm reassigning it to J, but then of course I lost the original information that was in J, so sometimes that might not be the behavior that you want. Okay, so these are exceedingly useful. Let me now show you a few other things here. So let's look at some constants here. I can have an integer here, and let's call it I, and for that matter, I can have a real here, and let's call it R. So now you're sitting there and you're saying, nah, everything that he's telling us is not true. And you might be right. Okay, so here you want to check if this is true, right? So can I just take a bit pattern like this and then assign it to an integer? And that's actually very, very simple. You just say that I here is equal to a binary constant, and you tell Fortran that you're looking at a binary constant by putting a B first, then an apostrophe, and then another one, and then you put your 1011, whatever it is. Okay, and then I can just do right star star I. What will happen now is that, as I told you, Fortran really only knows about integers that it's assuming is in 2's complement. So it's just going to look at the bit pattern you typed in. interpret it according to the 2's complement rules, and then write the decimal number. So Fortran assumes that your the default output that you want is decimal. So it's going to be writing out, it's going to write out the constant in decimal. Okay, so then you're going to say, well, how about setting I equal to a hexadecimal number? So I can set it equal to that by, so this here is a binary constant, and then I can set it equal to a hexadecimal constant by doing some A B C D E F here. That's the last one, zero, maybe something like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So we need another one. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Right? Now I is being set equal to a hexadecimal constant. And then I can write that one out. So again, I can do a write star star here of I. But these binary constants here, you can see that if you wanted to implement it, it's very, very easy, because all you have to do is that I take this bit pattern and stick it into memory where I is represented. So I can actually also do this here with R, and with R here, and then write out a real. There's no change. I can just set it equal to that constant. Now, what that might mean when we're looking at floating point numbers, we'll come to that in a few minutes. But while we're at it, I can let's do something else, because really what we did here was I said that J equal to -6 was represented in the way I had on the blackboard in a few minutes ago, and you're not going to believe this. So what you just have to do is a single write statement, and you want to write here on standard output, and then you're just going to have to tell the computer, instead of writing out the decimal conversion of your integer J, it should be writing out the 32 bits, and you just put B32 there. And then it'll write 32 bits on the screen. And that should be the 32 bits. That would be corresponding to that, and it should be the 2's complement. And the same thing goes for if you want to look at R here. If you want to set it equal to -6.0, then I can just write out here what the binary code is for that. So you can explicitly look at how things are represented on the computer. Well, if this here is B32 and set here codes for, if you want it in hexadecimal, then you just do 8 hexadecimal numbers. Okay. So what I'm trying to get at is that all these things you can just immediately verify that whatever I told you here holds true, and I can access and look at these individual bits here. Okay, maybe I'll start erasing here. Oh dear. Okay, I need to tell you, so we talked about 2's complement, that's how things are done on your computer. I'm going to tell you about another way of doing these negative numbers, and why I'm telling you about this will become clear in a few minutes. So this is sometimes also called a biased representation. So a value is represented as the unsigned number of which is n greater. In other words, when we want to represent a negative number, we add first big N to it, hope to get a positive number, and then we represent that. So what this means in our little examples here, if I look at 0, 0, 0, then in our unsigned way of looking at it, this would just be 0. But in this excess N code here, what this pattern would really represent would be the number plus a constant. So suppose that constant is 127. Then in order to get 0 after I added 127, then actually the number I was trying to represent must have been minus 127. And then you just continue upwards. So this here would be a minus 126. And here we're just, if we look at it then unsigned, then this would just be 1. And then I continue. So 111 here, 1111. That would be a way of writing 127. And if a number plus 127 is equal to 127, then the original number must have been 0. And here we have 127, 128, so we just go up to 1 here. And that would be 1000, and then 0000. And then the last number we can represent here is 1111, and that would be 128 here, and 255 here. Okay, so this is another way of doing this, and sometimes it's used. You can see that probably the addition compared to 2's complement is not going to be as efficient. So there, when you're playing around with these numbers, you realize that apart from negative numbers, maybe we want to look at a fraction. So suppose we want to work towards representing something that would be a more realistic way of writing a number on the real axis. So if I look here just mathematically for a moment, then I could write something like this, where I'm writing like that. So if I write this out, then I'm actually looking at 0 and then point some bit patterns here and so forth. And this here is in binary code. So when we looked over on the other point of the decimal places, we represented everything as 2 to the power 0, then 2 to the power 1, 2 to the power 2. When we go on the right-hand side of the decimal place, then I interpret that bit here as B1 times 2 to the minus 1, then B2 here, 2 to the minus 2, and then this bit here as B3, 2 to the minus 3. All right, so positive powers over here and then negative powers over here. All right, it's just a, you okay with that? The then actually what we have here when we look at it is that I may have B1 here times 2 to the minus 1, then B2, 2 to the minus 2, then plus B3, 2 to the minus 3. For the moment, I'm forgetting about any positive powers. I'm just looking at a fraction here. And then we continue on with other powers. I'm now going to be slightly clever, because I'm going to write this as 4b1 here, and then plus 2b2, and then plus b3 times 8 to the power minus 1. And then we can continue on, and then we would have another set of parentheses times 8 to the minus 2. So if we have any number that's written in binary code, I can easily convert that to octal form, right? So this year, maybe we should write it as 01 and then 02, 8 to the minus 2. So let me give you one example. If I look at a binary number, and let's do the whole thing here. So I look at 101 here, and then 011, 110, 010. And then I put some decimal place that I really shouldn't be called a decimal place. It should be, well, what's the binary equivalent of the decimal point? The, yeah, well, the binomial point? I don't know what it should be called. Anyway, it's the point where we go from positive powers to negative powers. So 111 here, and then 100. So I'm going to now interpret this in, and this might not be how things are done on your computer, but this is just one way towards working at how you would represent floating point numbers. According to the rules that I have here, then I just go to the octal form, and that's very easy because I just take these three bits, and that gives me a 5. These gives me a 3. Here I have 6. We know that already. And here I have 2. Then I put the decimal place. Then I'm going to combine these. It's a 7 here. And then I have a 4. And that would be in octal. And if I combine, if I take 4 of these, I would be going up to the hexadecimal representation. Okay? So if you have a base 2 representation, going to a base 8 and up to base 16 is very trivial. It's only when you want to convert this to the way we think, the decimal one, then I'm going to have to go in and say, oh, it was actually 7 here, and then times 8 to the minus 1, and then 4 times 8 to the minus 2, And then this here would be 2, and then 6 times 8, and so forth. Right? So that would be base 10. So shifting around between these representations is very simple. Okay? So what we need now is to think about how we want to represent the floating point number. In a little bit more detail. So the first thing here is that probably we want to somehow use a normalized scientific notation. And so if I have something that's 37.5, I would say that maybe we should really think about this as 3.75 times 10 to the 1. And this here is again base 10, right? I'm just talking about ordinary numbers here. If I have another one here, which would be 0.0025 here, maybe I should write it as 2.5 10 to the minus 3. Again, base 10. And that's just because you want to represent things in a unique way, not in 15 different ways here, according to how you choose to put the exponent. So usually when you're representing a floating point number or a real number, you make a decision that you have to follow some kind of convention for what's going around the decimal point. Okay? So the way this is done in binary here, is that one follows usually a convention, but it is just a convention, is that we make the choice of writing 1 and then B1, B2, and so forth. So if, and then times some 2 to some power m here, okay. If I look at this number here that I have, then you can see that this is actually a number that is going to be greater than or. So this here is greater than or equal to 1, and it's always strictly less than 2. I guess the corresponding equivalent, what we're doing up here, is that it's always bigger than 1 and less than 10. Bigger than or equal to 1 and less than 10. So there's one thing here that's interesting to note. If we make the choice that the bit that we have at this point here, I can shift up and down the position of where I want to put this binomial point, right, by adding on a multiplication by a power, right? If I make the convention that you want to do it so that the bit here is always equal to 1 and then everything else up there is equal to 0, then you realize that we don't have to represent that. So the 32 bits that we will be using for representing a floating point numbers, one of them, if you like, we're actually going to use 33, because I'm going to take this convention and say that bit is always equal to 1. So before I show you how a floating point number is actually realized, then I just want to give you one example here. Let's look at the number 1 over 10. In our decimal world, this here would be just written 0.1 in base 10, right? Now I want to write this in binary code, and what you would be doing is that you would first go to the octal one and then immediately convert the octal one to a binary one. So if I write this out, then you actually see that this here is 0.0 and then 6314 6314 6314 and so forth in base 8. Now I can then convert that into a binary number, and if I don't think about these issues of normalizing it, then I would actually get something here that would be 0 point, and then this here we would have to split it into 3 zeros, right? And then I should be writing 6 in decimal, so that would be 110. Then I write the 3 here, that would be 011. Then I write the 1 here, which would be 001, and so forth, base 2. The point I'm getting at here is that you might be thinking that 0.1, I can represent that exactly. But if you try to write that in either octal or binary code, you have to truncate. So when you start doing numerical calculations, inherently you think that if I have a fraction which is simple, it doesn't extend out to infinity in the decimal base, in base 10, then the same things obviously have to be true in base 2 or base 8. That is wrong. Okay? Here is a prime example, 0.1. I'm done. I just need everything beyond the 1 here would be 0, but when I go to octal and binary, the fraction extends out to infinity. And so there's a little story that goes with this. How many of you guys were born in 1991? Ah. Okay. Only one of you were. Okay. Let me rephrase that question. Prior to 1991. Okay, that's a few more. How old were you guys in 1991? Three, okay, yeah. Five. I'm not gonna tell you how old I was. I on the 25th of February in 1991, I was actually in Paris having a great time there. But in other parts of the world, things were, so do you remember what, there was a war going on in 1991? Do you remember? Yeah, this was the first Gulf War, right? And so I remember seeing this on TV, and the Americans were very gung-ho because they had something called the Patriot missile, and Saddam Hussein, he had these Scud missiles that came over, and So on February 25 in 1991, a Scott missile struck an American Army base and killed 28 soldiers. A report on the incident entitled Patriot Missile Defense Software Problem Led to System Failure reported on the course of failure. It turns out that the course was an inaccurate calculation of the time since boot. So they would actually switch on these Patriot missiles. I actually remember that they came on the CNN and saying, don't worry, our troops are going to be all right. They just have to see the Scott missile first and then switch on the Patriot missiles. Of course, the soldiers, when they were out there, then they said, oh, we don't know when these missiles are going to be coming. So they booted their missile defense systems. That turned out to be a major mistake. Specifically, the time in tenths of second, as measured by the system's internal clock, was multiplied by 1 over 10. And the guy who wrote it thought that everything would be hunky-dory doing that. The small chopping error when multiplied by the large number given the time in tenths of seconds led to a significant error. Indeed, the Patriot battery had been up around 100 hours, and basically, that meant that the accumulated error from doing the multiplication here led to an error of 0.34 seconds. The missile simply thought it was somewhere else. So the hands-on repair, they told them that they could only switch them on for about 10 hours, and then they would have to reboot. That would mean that the error would be small enough. What you might think that this year is without consequences, but 28 soldiers killed because somebody didn't realize that 1 over 10 couldn't be represented exactly. That's sad, right? So these things here have implications. So how about another one? How about a half? Can I represent a half exactly? Yes, a half would work, right? So you can look at these simple fractions. So if they hadn't done it in a tenth of a second, but in half seconds, then let's now look at how things are actually done. The way it's done is that the name of this representation is the IEEE, so this is the the International Engineering and something, Electrical Engineering, yes?
About the prolongation thing, isn't it always possible to like represent that at 1 over 2, 1 over 3, or anything like that in two different ways? At least 1 over 2, like 1 over 2 is like
0.001. That's right. What you're saying is that the real numbers actually form a continuum on the axis, but when we represent them, they will be discrete. So you're actually going to be looking at discrete points on the axis, and what is done internally is that when you're asking for representation, it's going to go to the nearest one. So when you chop off that, so you're right. If I allow my if I have an infinite amount of bits available, then I can do anything. But when I chop it off, they're going to be representing discrete points. So the IEEE standard floating point here the way it's done here is that you take 32 bits and we talked about these double precisions. When you look at that, you would actually get 64 bits. So the layout is that you use one bit here. That would be the sign. So this here would be the sign bit. Okay. Then I have an exponent here. So this is an exponent here. And it's a number, let's call it C here. And then we have the mantissa, and it's normalized. Mantissa here. So it's written precisely the way that I showed you. There's an assumed bit here, which is 1, and then dot some bits here. Let's call that just for F here, so it's a sequence of bit, and it's written, of course, in base 2. So sometimes this here is called the significant. So I have 1 bit here. Then I have 8 bits here for the exponent, and then I have 23 bit for the mantissa, or what's sometimes called the significant. So when you look at this number, if you can determine the binary pattern here, then you're in business. You just have to know here that the exponent is written in excess 127. So if I look at this, then the number here that's actually written is minus 1 to the power s. That would give us the sign. And then I have 1, and then some a sequence of bits here. That would be these 23 bits over there, interpreted in base 2 according just to the examples that we just did. And then I multiply this by 2 here, and then to a power, and the power here is just whatever number is written there, minus 127. Okay, so that's the way things are stored in the computer here. So if you look at it, so let's look at it here. The exponent, first of all. So C here, it's bigger than 0, and then less than 1111, and then 1111 here in base 2 here. Okay, which is 255. So when I look at C minus 127, then that is actually bigger than minus 126 and then less than 127. So the biggest exponents that I can get would be 2 to the power 127, and then the smallest one I would be getting is 2 to the minus 126. Now you're going to say, well, the values where C is equal to either 0 or 255 here, reserved. Okay. So when we look at this number and it's a number that we play around with, then we would assume that what is written here, when I translate it in, it's going to give me something that's between minus 127 and up, minus 126 and then up to 127. Then I look at the mantissa, whatever would be before multiplying with the exponent, and so I would have we already talked about this. The number that I can write here, it has to be bigger than or equal to 1. So let me just write it like this. And strictly less than 1 point, or strictly less than 1.111, or less than or equal to 1.11, and 2. And here I have 23 of these bits set. Now, this here, when I convert that to binary, it's 1, and then I just follow the rules that we talked about, plus 2 to the minus 1, plus 2 to the minus 2, and so forth, down to the 2 to the minus 23. And that actually turns out to be 2 to the minus 2 minus 2 to the minus 23. Okay. So the largest number I can represent with this model is 2 minus 2 to the minus 23 here, and then multiply it by 2 to the power 127. If you convert this, this is roughly 3.4 10 to the 38. Okay, so the smallest number here, the smallest number that's 2 to the minus 126, and that's of the order 1.2 here, and then 10 to the minus 38. So in our decimal world, the exponent that you get is from 38 to minus 38, and that's about it. So if you want to work with other things, then you have to go to a higher precision. So I want to end by telling you one more thing that you have to know for doing the tutorial today here. And we very often talk about machine epsilon here. So in this model here, I have a fraction, and that is written as 1, and then B1 here, and then B23. So if I look and I'm working with these numbers, if I take 1 and then add 2 to the minus 23 to it, then I can actually do that, because I would just have to set all these bits equal to 0 and then the last one equal to 1. So the number I get is actually different from 1. On the other hand, if I take 1 here and then I add 2 to the minus 24 to it, then it can't do it. I'm just going to get 1 again here. And so one talks here about machine epsilon. And it's the it's defined so that it's the smallest number so that 1 plus epsilon is different from 1. In over here, when we look at it, you can see that for these 32-bit floats here, real numbers, then that number is something like 10 to the minus 24, maybe you want to 10 to the minus 23 here, according to this example. And that's around 1.2 10 to the minus 7 base 10. So when I'm looking at close to the representation of 1, the next number that I can represent that is different from 1 would be 1 plus roughly 10 to the minus 7. Anything finer than that is going to fall into the cracks. So whatever machine epsilon here is, that will tell you about the granularity of the points that you have on the real axis. And obviously, you want machine epsilon in principle to be 0 and hopefully as small as possible. What this here means is that if you're doing calculations in these single or 32-bit real numbers, you roughly sort of ballpark only get 6 digits of precision. So sometimes you might be doing a calculation and you might be tempted to say that I can calculate that result with 10 digits. In some cases you may be lucky that that works out, but in reality, if you represent with 32-bit floats here, you cannot really hope to get more than 6 digits of precision. And that's why roughly today most people would not be doing calculations using these 32 bits. They would actually be using a 64-bit representation, and the 64-bit representation, I can show you that tomorrow. It looks exactly the same thing, except for you have more bits for the mantissa and more bits for the exponent. So I'll stop here.